The new Czechoslovakia, created from the debris of World War I, understood one thing from the outset, that a fundamental factor in the prosperity and success of the new state would be winning the confidence of international investors in the country and its currency. Tough and unpopular budget discipline was enforced to build trust in the new currency, and the eventual international vote of confidence in the country was the successful launch of its first bond issue. Bonds are essentially a state's IOU, promising to pay back the original amount loaned along with regular interest payments in between over long periods. They are a stable, if unspectacular, investment tool. But the flip side is the scenario that if the state says it will not pay up on its bond, so-called default, is a spectacular signal which creates fear across the international capital markets and distrust of the country. That, though, was precisely what the communist regime did on the swathe of bonds, including the prestigious 1922 Czechoslovak state issue, after coming into power in 1948. Later it sought to make amends by negotiating deals with some of the countries whose citizens were hurt most by the default. Once again, the communist regime was charged, though, with shortchanging the bondholders, a state of play which some argue remains the case till today. One of those is Prague-based fund manager Jeremy Monk, and he believes that some detective work carried out in the United States about the final agreement between the Czechoslovak authorities, the United States, and an organisation representing bondholders should increase pressure on the current Czech government to prove that its word is its bond. Mr. Monk takes up the story by describing the swathe of bonds which the Czechoslovak state, cities and companies issued to provide the foundation for its economic success.
We're talking about foreign-denominated bonds issued in the early 1920s. The most significant was the Czechoslovak state bond of 1922. That was closely followed by some municipal bonds, the city of Greater Prague, and then in 1924 we also had a bond issue from Karlovy Vary, and that was followed then by corporate issues, including First Bohemia Glass. One or two others have come to light, possibly Brunner Turbine would be another example of a foreign-denominated bond issued from the Czech Republic.
The state bond was the key. Its success meant essentially that Czechoslovakia had won the argument where it mattered, that the country was a good and stable bet way into the future. Mr. Monk, again.
It's a hugely historically important bond issue because it was the first international bond issue not only from the Czechoslovak state but from any Central European country. It really was formal recognition of the Czechoslovak state as an independent entity by the great powers. The great powers, of course, then being France, Britain and America. So it was international recognition. It was also hugely historically important in terms of the economic success of the Czech Republic as well, because it immediately stabilised the economic situation in the Czech Republic. It immediately led to stabilisation in the value of the currency. It enabled all these follow-up bond issues as well. So in fact, during the interwar years, whereas many neighbouring countries such as Germany were really suffering, in fact, it was a golden era for, you know, Czechoslovakia.
The state bond issues, denominated in both US dollars and the United Kingdom sterling, were shared out between some of the biggest financial centres of the day and won substantial interest from an international and domestic audience.
The bond issues took place basically in New York, London, and some bonds were also directly sold into Amsterdam. Obviously, there was some domestic demand for these bonds as well. In terms of the dollar bond issues, we're talking about $36 million, but of course that was dollars in gold dollars as it was then. So in fact the value now is very high.
As economic tension mounted in the 1930s, bondholders in Czechoslovakia were invited to switch their dollar and sterling-denominated bonds into ones in crowns. It was a fairly orthodox way of allowing the state and Czechoslovak Central Bank of reducing its future exposure to pressure on the local currency. But foreign bondholders were not covered by the move. Other, still run-of-the-mill moves followed World War II, but the big shock default came after the communist seizure of power.
Well, just before the communist takeover, in 1946, the maturities of these bonds were all extended and the coupons, the interest rates reduced. That's quite common to happen to bonds after a difficult period, which obviously World War II was a difficult period. However, then in 1952, so post the communist putsch in 48, in 1952, the dollar bonds were defaulted on. In 1959, the sterling bonds were defaulted on.
The communists eventually sought to patch up relations from their own move, which effectively made them pariahs on the international capital markets. A deal with London came quickly, but that with the US was a much longer drawn-out affair.
Well, the sterling bondholders, just to briefly cover that side of the story, were somewhat luckier because immediately after the sterling default in 1959, the British government intervened, and in fact a settlement was reached quite quickly in 1960, whereby sterling bondholders got back 75% of the face value of what they were owed. Unfortunately, the story with regards to the dollar bondholders is less fortunate. In fact, negotiations there dragged on for decades. Eventually, a broad settlement was reached in 1982, involving the return of 18.5 tonnes of gold, which the Allies had seized at the end of World War II. That gold was returned to the Czechoslovak state in return for about $81 million of payments to be made to those who had lost property following the communist takeover. Unfortunately, the bondholders didn't actually receive a payment at that time. Instead, in the annex to the agreement, there was a commitment that a settlement would be reached with the bondholders. Nevertheless, the gold was returned prior to any settlement with the bondholders, and that later caused problems.
Monk says his research shows that the communists played hardball once they got the gold back in their hands. They did everything to exclude many categories of bondholders from making claims for payments against them and appeared determined that the costs would be as low as possible. The US government appeared to do little to salvage a deal which appeared fatally flawed once the gold was gone. Jeremy Monk continues.
It was widely condemned. It was even condemned by the Foreign Bondholders Protective Council, who were the appointed agents to represent the bondholders. They condemned the matter. Obviously, the bondholders did. And pretty quickly, their warnings proved absolutely correct, because when negotiations started, the Czechoslovak side were pretty intransigent. And in fact, what happened as a result, you had a highly discriminatory agreement. Certain bonds were completely excluded. For example, bonds of First Bohemia Glass, which was a nationalised company, they were completely out of the story. Then emigres, bonds that the Czechoslovak state said were held by emigres, they didn't get a payment. Other bondholders who happened to be holding bonds subject to a New York court case that went against the Czechoslovak state, those bonds only got 20%, a much lower payout. And to cap it all, it seems that there's evidence that the settlement in its entirety was actually underfunded. So you have many bonds still in issue, stamped as consenting and accepting the offer, and didn't get payment. So it pretty was a farce in the end.
Mr. Monk is not the first to have been frustrated by the Czech Finance Ministry's alleged stonewalling on the issue of these non-honoured bonds. but he has been able to consult the agreements promising eventual payment and track the communist moves to whittle down the claims they would face by going to the archives of the US body that was supposed to represent the bondholders.
I was really quite frustrated because I obviously knew about the story from about 5 years ago when Edward Fagan hit the headlines with some of these bonds. I was curious about the agreement that these bonds were subject to because, of course, there should have been a settlement. These bonds should not be still in issue. Then I came across some of these bonds myself, bonds that were stamped as consenting to the offer, wrote to the Ministry of Finance and pretty much received very evasive answers. I requested many times a copy of the agreement that these bonds were meant to have consented to. It wasn't forthcoming. So I was really frustrated. They refused to even authenticate the bonds, which is surprising as I'd actually had experience with the US Treasury authenticating pre-war bonds. A completely different experience, I should say. So I was frustrated, but also I felt helpless. Where on earth was I going to get, you know, the real story from? Then I happened to notice that the archives of the Foreign Bondholders Protective Council, which were the American representatives to the agreement, are actually at Stanford University Libraries. So they were kind enough to send me copies of the signed agreements. I still wanted to look through the archives, and by pure chance, a good friend of mine happened to be presenting at Stanford University and agreed to look through the archives. So the article I wrote was based really on archive evidence.
Monk believes that the new evidence out now in public and the rapidly looming anniversary of the foundation of the Czechoslovak state could increase the pressure on the Czech finance ministry to honour its old debts. He says the Czech state and its predecessor, Czechoslovakia, are unique in apparently holding out against honouring an agreement and payments that should have been made. And he has suggested that US authorities might like to contribute as well, since they were so laid back in protecting their bondholders' interests 30 years ago. Mr. Monk adds that he has very little personally to gain from any payment, though has some of the bonds in his possession.
The whole story really intrigued me. You know, when an institution gets very evasive, you clearly want to get to the truth. So it was really, that was the motivation, finding out what really happened. I think now that the facts are in the public domain, backed by the archive evidence, it's very difficult now for the Czech authorities to claim they don't know what really happened. If they don't know, they're welcome to look through the archives, read my article themselves. But what is absolutely clear is that all these bond issues were really negotiated at the absolute highest level of the Czechoslovak state. You had the Prime Minister personally negotiating, Edward Beneš. You had the President's son, Jan Masaryk, also heavily involved in the negotiations. So the fact that these bonds remain outstanding in some ways is both a disgrace. They should have obviously received full payment and they should have been included in any settlement. However, it's also an opportunity because, you know, we're now coming up to the centenary of the foundation of the Czechoslovak Republic. So it's a time for reflection on the values that the current republic is founded on. And so I think, you know, those values that are very much embraced in the First Republic of you know, honest dealing and, you know, your word is your bond, those things should really carry through to the current time. And I think many Czechs do appreciate that. And I think for that reason, possibly that reason alone, I think the government will come round to a conclusion that it would be appropriate to settle these claims.
Mr. Monk says the cost of Prague agreeing to fulfil its promise and make the payments on the bonds would be fairly low to pay for its honour. The Czech Finance Ministry has frequently said in the past that the time limit for claims to be made on these bonds has long since expired.